You're listening to Food Integrity Now with your host, Carol Gervais.
Hello and welcome to Food Integrity Now. I'm Carol Gervais. I am a certified holistic nutritionist and the host of the show. At Food Integrity Now, we like to investigate and explore what's happening in our food supply so that you can make wise decisions for your health and for your family's health. And I'd like to give a big shout out to Ben Sound Music for our intro and outro music. Hi, it's Carol Gervais, and I am a certified holistic nutritionist, a life coach, and the host of Food Integrity Now. What you eat and how you eat can greatly affect the way you look and feel and whether or not you get sick. If your immune system is compromised, you might have brain fog, allergies, low energy, depression, have trouble sleeping, you might be overweight, or worse, have a disease. A poor diet can lead to diabetes, cancer, Alzheimer's, and virtually all other diseases. I take great pride in working with individuals and groups and seeing how they create such positive changes in their lives. I offer one-on-one coaching packages, or we can design a package just for your group. To find out more, go to foodintegritycoaching.com or call me at 415-302-7100 for your free consultation. I offer phone and Skype sessions, and this really is all about quality of life. Let me assist you to have the best quality ever. Hi, it's Carol again. Do you drink almond milk? Do you know that packaged almond milk contains all sort of nasty additives like carrageenan and barely contains any actual almonds? The good news is that you can make fresh almond milk at home in minutes. Once you taste the creamy, fresh flavor of homemade almond milk, you'll never go back. I make my almond milk at home with a Nutiana nut milk bag. It's great, easy to use, easy to clean, and makes my almond milk silky smooth. Buy yours today by searching the Nutiana nut milk bag on Amazon. That's Nutiana. Nut milk bag, or go to Nutiana.com. You're going to love this bag. My guest today is Ed Pedersen, who is a Danish pig farmer who observed remarkable improvements in the health of his herd when he switched from genetically modified soy to a non-GMO soy. Along with other researchers, Pedersen is at the forefront of an emerging movement that is bringing to light the broad toxicity of GM crops and associated pesticides. Ev, I'm really thrilled to be talking with you today. And first of all, can you share with our listeners a little bit more about what you do? And then we can talk about some of the things you observed in your pigs and what happened during that whole process of changing their feed. Welcome to the show.
Thank you, Carol. I'm very grateful to be on your show. And well, I'm a Danish pig farmer, been so for nearly 20 years. We have a herd of 450 sows and make pigs at a sale weight on 30 kilo. We have 10 hectares arable as well, and I'm an organic strawberry farmer as well. We have 8.5 hectares we harvested on this year. We started to go in thinking about GM soya or not GM soya in 2011. I had seen some problems in my herd, and I was starting to get an idea that it could be related to GM soya. So I went on to having a look at scientific studies, etc. And I found out that whenever they feed GM soya, and it was what I call free science, not industry science, then they always end up with liver and kidney damage, and the liver with with health issues, stomach issues, and
what kind of things were you noticing with your pigs? Let's just
the thing was very easy. We just changed to non-GM soya, and we just like a thing you do in farming. We just changed from one day to the other, and what happened immediately after we changed to a non-GM soya was that the herd health got better. Our pigs immediately stopped having diarrhea in the farrowing house. We had had, well, the funny thing was I didn't tell my herdsman that we changed, and he came 2 days after I changed to non-GM soya, and he said, "You've done something with the food." I said, "Yes." And he said, "Bad?" "No, no, no." He says, "No, come in the farrowing house." So we went around in there, and he said, "I don't know," he says, "today I have not injected one pig against diarrhea." And he said, well, we both was pretty fed up with diarrhea. We had had a very bad month just before. Lots of pigs died because of it. And it was all quiet. There's no diarrhea. And on top of that, the sows was eating what was in the trough. We had eating, they didn't want to eat all, some of them. But, we noticed that there was much more quiet in the pig house. Because it's like the pigs are fed and they're not ready for market, but they're ready to sleep. So it was very quiet in there. There had been too many sows that was not able to make milk enough in the past. And that certainly stopped. When they use non-GM soya, they get higher milk yield. Not that we actually milk it out and meter it, but you can look at the pigs and see what they get to drink. And also they can feed more pigs. We managed to feed almost 2 pigs more at the udder. They have 14 teats and basically can have 14 piglets. They probably farrow 15. So we have to take the odd one away to a replacement mother, or spare mother. In the past, we always started them off with 14, but very quickly we had to remove the smallest. Now they were able to look after their pigs.
Wow. And so a couple of the things you noticed right away was they stopped having the diarrhea. They were calmer and they were essentially eating better.
Much better.
And the piglets were able to grab
out. They got enough to drink. That is amazing.
Okay.
And on top of that, we noticed after a month when we started to wean the sows that had farrowed on non-GM soya, we could see that all of a sudden, hey, what's wrong here? We have old grandmothers of sows with 6 layers in the past on GM soy, and they never achieved more than 10 or 11 weaned per liter. But then all of a sudden, these sows, they come out with 14 strong pigs in their retirement, if you like. And that is very unnormal that a sow get its highest production that late in life. And that is what we saw.
That's pretty significant.
That is very significant because it used to be downhill. So after 6 layers, then it go downhill. And what we had, we also noticed that our sows could stay in high production for 1 or 2 layers extra.
What does that mean, high production?
That means that we have like a graph in the computer and say when this sow farrow fewer pigs than average or as he is worse than average at weaning, then she get under average. And then we start selling them. But they were actually able to keep going, a lot of the sows, for 1-2 layers longer. And on top of that, we noticed that when we weaned them, they were much more in heat. After 4 days, they were all ready to get inseminated. And we had had some inseminating problems with them not being ready till 5, 6, 7 days, 8 maybe after weaning. And it results in fewer pigs next time, 100%. Well, so everything was up. We had fewer abortions and we had a higher conception rate.
Wow. And that is really significant. And the reason that's so significant with what you were noticing is that It's my understanding that the reproductive system of the pigs is somewhat similar to humans.
They're very much the same.
Very much the same. So that's why this is so significant. So you started noticing less abortions.
Yes. And then a bit later on, we found out that it was not for fun that we have stopped using medicine in the farrowing house to the small pigs, that we didn't have any diarrhea anymore, diarrhea issues. So our medicine use went down to a third. Well, it's pretty low being in Denmark. Compared to America, we are on a fifth of what a farmer in America is using on average. But then I went to a third of average. So 15 times less than a normal American farm.
After you switched to the non-GMO soy.
Yes. And then on top of that, we had another issue that was, we used to have about one sow a month die due to ulcer or bloat. Ulcer is easy to find. You come out in the morning, you find a dead sow in the farrowing pen, and she has coughed all her blood out. It looks horrible. And piglets are running around normally. But it's that stopped completely. When we found non-GM soy, that stopped completely.
So the ulcers or the ulcers and the bloating just kind of went away.
That went away.
Wow.
And I later found out that this can all be explained because I went in the press with this in Denmark, farming press, and certain sites in the agro industry don't like me for that. But I went in the farming press and it got in television as well in a food program. And in that program, they asked the minister what she would do to make sure that citizens could eat non-GM fed meat from the supermarkets. And she said, oh, you can buy organic. Well, that's a laugh because there's not enough organic pigs in Denmark, not at all. And it's only about 1% of what is conventional. And then she said, well, I'll let Aarhus University, our land grant university, look into what it has seen. And they contacted me and they got a lot of scientific data from me, both from my pig herd and from PowerPoint like John Hoover had shown in America, etc. And a lot of scientific papers that I said you need to read this to understand what is happening in the pig herd.
Okay.
And they hadn't actually seen that before. But I tell you one thing, they have now. They have really done a good work. And you can actually see it on net in English. It's called Memorandum of the Feeding of Genetically Purchased Modified Glyphosate-resistant soy production to livestock.
Okay, and I'll get that from you and put that on the show page later so that people can look that up.
Right. Okay. But that in the last appendix, it's all coming to a pair with what I've seen. They've simply gone into what I've experienced and what a hen farmer who was in the same program in television had experienced going non-GM, and literally they came up with two things. Glyphosate can affect the microbial population, microbiota, in the animal gut, with secondary effects on animal production and health. And
yeah.
B, glyphosate can affect mineral status, with secondary effects on animal production and health. This sounds a little bit technical, but basically, they go on to explain what it means. This totally explains that everything we have seen in our herd can be related to that we have less glyphosate in the food.
You know, when you were talking about the minerals, that makes sense because, as we know, glyphosate is a mineral chelator, which means that it binds the minerals and makes them unavailable. So that makes a lot of sense that they that the glyphosate would do that in the same way in the pig.
Yeah, it does. It's, we use huge amounts of soya altitude. They get, depending on if they are in the dry barn or in the farrowing house, 9 or 15% of their food is soya. But it's also that what I have studied is that we have actually seen that the biggest level of glyphosate in our feed is not coming from the soya. It's coming from the sprayed down grains.
Okay, so talk a little bit more about that.
The study we did over a 2-year period where we had tested the grains for Ella, every load of food we got, we tested. The food bin was 1 year consumption, so it is a mixing auger system inside, so it is one sample or two samples. But it was very low because I'm totally strict on non-roundup. And then we test every load of soya, and then when we buy in grains, we test them individually, load per load. And we have worked out exactly what is in the food every day of the year for a 2-year period. And then we can make like a graph, and we have all the deformed peaks on the data in the calendar. And so we can see how it matches up.
Let me just reiterate what I think you're saying is that non-GMO soy you were feeding, some of these grains were still sprayed with glyphosate.
I'm not sure they actually literally sprayed with glyphosate, but they used Roundup instead of a plow like you would have done in the old days.
Okay, so on the field, they use the Roundup.
They use the Roundup, and they use pig manure to put on the field. It's also high in glyphosate.
Okay.
And then it comes up in the plant again.
Okay, because it's systemic and it can't be washed off.
No, it's in the plant for life.
Yeah, it's in there for life. Okay, so then you started measuring your grain for the levels of Roundup in it. And you could correlate that with what was happening with your pigs.
Yes, definitely. As it was very pronounced. Then we were able to analyze from the pig data. We have a lot of data in the pig house. Each farrowing is written up. What we saw was that if you go from 0.2 parts per million or grams per ton, it's the same, to 1.5 grams per ton, between 1 and 2 grams per ton. Then you have a 5-doubled the amount of, 500% increase in abortions.
Okay, so it's the, in layman's term, in essence, there's more glyphosate in the grain, and then you see more abortions.
If you eat a lot of Kellogg's cornflakes full of GM maize, you only need to eat a quarter of your diet, then I think you are on the high level. And then you will certainly be more in risk for abortions, definitely.
Yeah.
And you will also have fertility problems. You are not likely to get so easy pregnant.
Yeah, and when you look at the fertility issue in the United States, which is a huge issue right now, you can see the correlation between, well, several things, but glyphosate certainly could be a factor.
It is a very big factor, I think. But what we noticed was from 0.2 to, say, 1.5, we had 0.95 pigs less born per liter. There's simply just less that was alive when they got born. And then there was also the 5 times more abortions. And on top of that, there were almost 5 times more born deformed. At a dose in the food at 0.1 grams per ton, I don't think you'd be able to buy that in an American supermarket. My pigs are fed at a lower dose than humans eat in America.
Well, that's significant to think about.
Yeah, and when they feed at a very low dose, we have deformities about 1 out of 1,800. Mm-hmm. It's very strong deformities. It's a face totally marked up. You ain't able to see that it's a pig on the face.
Mm-hmm.
And you have a typical one is like your so-called Zika virus babies, microcephalia, where you have a small skull and typically a hole on top of the head. The bones are not melted together and the skin is often not on top either. They can be born alive, but they don't have a long life. Yeah. And also, that is one of the more common one we see with glyphosate damage. There's its spinal and cranial deformities that is the most common.
What have you been doing with this information that you've been compiling? I guess you would call them farm studies?
I've been an unusual farmer. I've not kept quiet about it. I put my voice loud and clear in many places, and I have been in a newspaper, and I'm frequently debating on the net. And I've been in the Danish Parliament, I've been in the English Parliament, Westminster, in Scotland and Wales, Parliament and Assembly. And I have been to Beijing speaking about it. And tomorrow I'm leaving for The Hague to the Monsanto Tribunal. I'm a witness called in for the tribunal.
Tribunal starts on the 14th, and we're all going to be watching that. So how well received when you gave this information to the Danish Parliament? What did they do with this information?
When I was in the Danish Parliament, was straight after I had done the change, so I just had a month's experience. And I had been active against GMOs and Roundup a year past before that. And I happened to be born in the same village like the president of the Folketing in Denmark. And so I simply just went up to visit him and say, this is what I find out. And he was a farmer as well. And I said, well, I don't believe this is right. And he said, I think you should come to Folketing to speak. Everybody in Denmark can contact the Folketing. And they have the right to go and speak for 15 minutes if they have a topic that is of interest to...
What is this organization again? What's it called?
The Folketing, it's our parliament.
Okay, I'm not...
It's our parliament.
Okay, it's your parliament. What would that be equivalent to, like in the U.S.? Would that be like an FDA?
It's an agriculture wing of the parliament, yes.
Okay, so like our USDA. Okay, just so, you know, we can understand that. And then, so did you go do that?
Yes, I had quarter of an hour, but before that, I had an hour speaking to politicians about it. I didn't know about the deformities. I mentioned the deformities there, but I didn't have the data on it, of course. And if I go in there now, it'll be of a total different caliber, what data I have.
Are you still collecting data?
No, we are not at the moment.
But you have quite a bit since your initial...
Oh, I have a lot of data. And also, there's been extra data. Regarding that there were some studies in Denmark in the 1980s and until 1990 they got finished. Because farmers saw huge problems when they started to use Roundup as a desiccant. Mm-hmm. Farmers was aware that the herd's health dropped, that fertility was a problem, abortion was rife, and so did the farming advisors and the veterinarians, and they complained. So industry or the farming organization set down a test to see if it was right or not. A very, very well-made test over a 2.5-year period. They actually had sows farrowed into the system if they were fed, sprayed down grains or not, and they had grow old and have 4 layers and slaughtered at the end and examined. It was a very well-written piece of study. Well, what they found was that when you have your glyphosate in sprayed grains, then they had one sow lost all its pigs due to this same yellow diarrhea that we had severe problems with, only in the Roundup group, of course. And they had another one that was born premature, where all but three pigs died, only in the Roundup group. And the Roundup group of the highest dosage is about 2 parts per million or 3 parts per million. Then they had they have less pig survival in the Roundup groups. I think it was 20% of pigs died in the Roundup group and only about 12 or so in the normal one. And on top of that, I can tell you exactly in a minute, they had, compared to 88% piglet survival, they went down to 79% survival. So it means 21% is missing. The funny thing was, in this study, they were also aware of the milk yield. So they actually metered it. They put all the pigs to the sow, weighed them before, and weighed them after. So they knew, and they did that 11 times a day. So they knew how many liters the sow has been feeding. The milk yield dropped with highest loads of glyphosate. Then instead of producing 8.6 liters, it produced 7.3 liters in a day. And that's where it comes in. The same that I've seen, I could see my pigs was hungry. But on non-GM soya, they were not hungry anymore. The sow made more milk. Wow. Then they did another study when they have made the grain that was sprayed in the fields and harvested. So it's not the same like Monsanto make test with technical glyphosate. No, this is the real stuff. This is what you are eating. And there is everything in that, also the additives. And
let's talk about the additives for a minute.
No, I have just one thing more that was funny. Because same food they used on rabbits. And it proved that the rabbits had a conception rate of 90 instead of 96 when they were fed sprayed down grains. And the live born went down from 9 to 7.6 per liter. And on top of that, there was 2 rabbits aborting in the Roundup group. This is very bad. There are only 2 rabbits out of 146, I believe it was in the study, that aborted was in the Roundup group.
Yeah, well, that's pretty significant. And this is just from grains that were sprayed with the glyphosate as a desiccant, which means a drying agent.
Yes.
That's pretty significant. And one thing you mentioned was something about the other ingredients. And it's my understanding, Professor Seralini, who's done lots of testing on glyphosate, and probably one of the most well-known studies was his study that he did on the rats that went viral. But one of the things that they have concluded, he and other scientists, that the glyphosate becomes 1,000 times stronger, yes, more powerful when it is mixed with the inert ingredients, the other inert ingredients.
Well, inert and inert, that's what they go by, but I don't believe they are. They are actually in themselves more toxic than glyphosate.
Yeah.
But they don't necessarily make the deformities.
Yeah, but the combination is,
yes,
what I'm talking
about. It helps the glyphosate to get active.
Yeah, it helps that all to get active. And
it's very difficult because you really don't know what is in it.
Yeah,
and,
yeah.
Then we have another study because I kept going in the media. And every time I get a bigger and bigger hammer. So when I go in the media, the farming union, they don't want anybody to put blame on glyphosate. It's like the Holy Grail. And they don't want anybody to put anything on GMO. They're not totally worried about it because we don't grow it in Denmark, but we'd like to, or at least some of them like to. And so I was out in the farming press with a 2-page newspaper page article and saying that I said that glyphosate, GMOs need to be thoroughly assessed. Well, they were not very happy about that. And they made an ulcer study because of that, because I got invited to the Knowledge Center for Pigs, Knowledge Center for Farming. It's a farming organization. I had 2 hours to explain myself. And I was there fully geared. And at the end of this 2 hours, they suggested that they made a study on GM soy and non-GM so I fed to bacon pigs. I said, well, I only used it on sows. It might not show the same. They are older animals, but one study is very, very good. And I say, I already know. I knew Howard Vlieger, you see. And I know that he had a study that was not quite peer-reviewed at that time. So he wouldn't tell me about it. But I had an idea that there was at least some sort of stomach issues. And so I was quite happy that they did that. And I suggested that we did some bacteriological examinations of the guts as well and tested like the different organs against the body weight of the pigs when they got slaughtered. Well, they wouldn't have any of that.
Yeah, and just so our listeners know, I've interviewed Howard Vlieger and Judy Carman, and they can look up that study and that interview on our website, and it's pretty fascinating, peer-reviewed study.
Yes. What this study actually showed was that the first study, you know, they have made it like, well, we're not likely to find anything, so we just make it properly, of course. And then they get a shock. They didn't tell me or anybody, but they invited Monsanto to come and view the study. And then they didn't say anything. And I didn't know what happened. And I asked, where is this study? When are you having, aren't you having this pig slaughtered yet? Haven't you got some data on them? And they said, no, we're not nearly finished and so on. So they had actually made an extra study at a farmer because the first study proved that 13.7% more pigs had grievous ulcers, that's a really severe ulcers. And if they looked one column further down, they would find out it was actually 17% more pigs with severe ulcer over the size of 1 centimeter. That's a lot of pigs.
Yeah, that is a lot of pigs.
The whole picture has shifted because they have like 10 columns and everything got worse and worse. In all columns, it was worse in the GM group. So you have totally shifted the picture to a worse stomach health. And you basically pushed about 2 to 4 million pigs onto severe ulcers because of GM soya in Denmark per year.
Well, this has been really good information, and I know that you're going to continue to speak up about this and going to the tribunal in a day or so.
One thing more they made in this ulcer study, the second study, well, it was a real Monsanto study. They did not follow any good guidelines. They made a total mess of it. They were just interested in making a study that didn't show anything. Monsanto was there just to look.
The study you're talking about, who did that second study?
The first study was the Knowledge Center for Pigs, and they also did the second one. But now they knew that it was very serious, that they were going to have to say that, hello, Roundup, now GMOs make ulcers.
They altered the way they did the study
so that they weren't going to find anything.
So that they got the results they wanted.
But the funny thing was, they are not themselves aware of that they made a wonderful example because they actually tested the glyphosate levels in the two feeds, the non-GM and the GM, and they were the same. Wow. Yeah. There was the same amount of glyphosate in both. That means you can take that out of the equation for ulcers. No, it's a GMO inserted that makes the ulcers. It's not the Roundup. That's what they find out. And that's also explaining when the university in Aarhus looked at my findings, the only thing they could not explain with the antibiotic effect of glyphosate in the stomach and the lack of minerals that it gives was ulcers. They could not explain that. And you know what? This study explained it to full. It's because they have not looked at the GM inserted. It can do that itself.
Yeah. Wow, that's amazing.
That's why we are having a lot of stomach problems in American population today.
Yeah, I agree. I think that's accurate. So thank you very much for being a guest on our show today. This has been great information, and we really appreciate you taking the time today from Denmark to be a guest on our show. And I want to thank our listeners for listening today. And you can sign up at our website to receive more important shows like this and share the information with your friends and family and loved ones. And thanks for listening.